The Caribbean Sea looks like a postcard. It is a blue mask that hides a struggle for breath. Below the surface, a massive ancient architecture of calcium carbonate holds our islands together. We call them coral reefs. They are not just rocks or pretty backgrounds for tourists. They are the living shield of the region. For centuries, these reefs have broken the back of Atlantic swells and fed our people. But in the last 100 years, the balance shifted. The water is getting warmer. The chemistry is changing. We are watching a slow-motion collapse of the very walls that keep our homes dry. This is not a story about fish. This is a story about the vulnerability of our foundation. We are looking at what happens when the natural world is pushed to its absolute limit and the people who depend on it are left exposed. Chapter 1, The Living Shield. The Caribbean Sea, in the early 1900s, was a different world. In the Bahamas and along the coast of Belize, the water was a crowded highway of life. Men went out in wooden sloops. They used hand lines and simple traps. They did not have sonar. They did not have engines. They had the reef. They knew where the grouper gathered. They knew where the conch hid in the seagrass. At that time, the reef was an unquestioned giant. It was a massive, jagged wall of limestone covered in a thin, vibrant skin of living polyps. These polyps are small animals. They build the reef 1 millimeter at a time. It is the slowest construction project in history. In the Bahamas, the Andros Barrier Reef stretched for miles. It stood as a silent sentry against the deep tongue of the ocean. Our ancestors understood the reef as a pantry. It was the source of protein that sustained the islands when the soil was too thin or too salty for crops. But the reef served a second, more violent purpose. When the great hurricanes of the early 20th century rolled in from the Atlantic, they hit the reef first. The coral didn't just sit there. It was a physical barrier. It absorbed the energy of the waves. It turned a 30-foot wall of water into a manageable surge. Without the reef, many of our low-lying cays would have been scrubbed clean off the map decades ago. In Belize, the Great Maya Reef functioned as a national border. It kept the heavy sea out and created a massive calm lagoon. This lagoon allowed for the development of unique ecosystems like mangroves and seagrass beds. These areas acted as nurseries. Every snapper and lobster that eventually made it to a dinner plate started its life hiding in the roots of a mangrove protected by the reef. The system was circular. The reef protected the coast. The coast filtered the water for the reef. It was a machine of survival that had functioned for thousands of years. As the mid-century approached, the scale of human interaction changed. The Caribbean was no longer a collection of isolated fishing villages. It was becoming a destination. The 1950s and 60s brought the first wave of industrial-scale interest in the sea. In the Bahamas, the demand for lobster and conch began to climb. It was no longer just about feeding a family. It was about feeding a global market. The artisanal methods started to give way to more aggressive tactics. Divers stayed down longer. They took more. The reef was resilient, but it was designed for a slow pace of life. It was not built for the speed of modern commerce. The water remained clear, but the silence was different. The massive stands of elkhorn and staghorn coral looked like underwater forests. They were thick, they were strong, you could not imagine them disappearing. But the vulnerability was already there. It was hidden in the rising temperature of the air and the increasing frequency of ships passing through the channels. The reef is a sensitive organism. It requires a very specific range of temperature and light. Even in the 1950s, the first signs of stress were appearing to those who knew where to look. The water was beginning to hold more than just salt and life. It was starting to hold the heat of a changing world. The people of the islands lived in a state of deep reliance. We did not call it conservation back then. We called it living. If the reef was healthy, the fish were there. If the fish were there, the village was fed. It was a simple contract. But contracts can be broken by one side without the after being informed. The industrialization of the Caribbean was a quiet invasion of the water. We began to see the reef, not as a shield, but as a backdrop. This shift in perspective was the first crack in the wall. The living shield was about to face a pressure it was never evolved to handle. The question wasn't if the reef would change. The question was if the islands could survive the change. As the 1970s ended, A shadow fell over the Caribbean floor. It didn't come from a storm, it came from the water itself. A mysterious sickness was moving through the sea. It was targeting the cleaners of the reef. It was the first sign that the underwater world was losing its ability to heal itself. The protection we took for granted was beginning to dissolve. Chapter 2. The Great Bleaching. By the early 1980s, the vulnerability of the Caribbean became a visible, haunting reality. It started with the long-spined sea urchin, the diadema. In 1983, a mystery pathogen swept through the region. It moved fast. It started near the Panama Canal and rode the currents. Within a year, 97% of the sea urchins in the Caribbean were dead. To an outsider, a bunch of dead urchins might seem like a small thing. To the reef, it was a catastrophe. The urchins were the gardeners. They ate the algae that competed with the coral for space. Without them, the algae went wild. It began to choke the living polyps. The vibrant colors of the reef were being smothered by a thick brown carpet of weed. Jamaica felt this blow harder than almost anywhere else. The island's reefs were already under pressure from heavy fishing and coastal development. The loss of the urchins was the tipping point. The reefs off the coast of Ocho Rios and Montego Bay began to look like graveyards. The Elkhorn coral, which had stood for centuries, started to crumble. This wasn't just an environmental loss. It was a loss of infrastructure. Without the living coral to maintain the height of the reef, the waves began to reach further inland. Beaches that had been wide and white for generations started to shrink. The sea was reclaiming the land. Then came the heat. In the late 80s and throughout the 90s, the Caribbean experienced its first major mass bleaching events. Coral bleaching is a stress response. When the water gets too warm, the coral expels the tiny algae living in its tissues. These algae provide the coral with food and its brilliant color. Without them, the coral turns a ghostly, bone white. It is not dead yet, but it is starving. We watched as miles of reef in the Bahamas and the Cayman Islands turned white overnight. It looked like a forest fire had moved through the ocean, leaving only ash behind. The cause was no longer a mystery. It was the rising baseline of global temperatures. The Caribbean Sea acts like a heatsink. It absorbs the energy of a warming planet. But the coral has a breaking point. If the water stays even 1 or 2 degrees above the average for too long, the coral cannot recover. The bleaching events became more frequent. They used to happen once every few decades. Now, they were happening every few years. The reef was being denied the time it needed to regrow. Industrial tourism added to the strain. Large cruise ships dropped massive anchors that smashed centuries of growth in a single afternoon. Runoff from coastal resorts pumped nitrogen and chemicals directly into the lagoons. This fed the algae even more. In Jamaica, the reefs that once boasted 60 or 70% coral cover dropped to less than 10% in many areas. The fish populations collapsed. The snapper and grouper vanished, replaced by smaller, less valuable species. The pantry was empty. The shield was breaking. The impact on the community was a quiet crisis. In the fishing villages of Belize and Jamaica, men began to spend more on fuel to go further out to sea because the local reefs were dry. The vulnerability was no longer a scientific concept. It was a financial one. It was a hunger one. We realize that our islands are not just land. They are the tips of underwater mountains. If the foundation of those mountains rots away, the whole structure becomes unstable. The silence of the dying reef was louder than any storm. By the turn of the millennium, the Caribbean was the global epicenter of coral loss. We had lost half of our living coral since the 1970s. The scientists were using words like terminal. The tourists still came for the blue water, but they were swimming over skeletons. The relationship between the people and the sea had reached a point of rupture. We were no longer taking from a boundless resource. We were presiding over a funeral. The scale of the loss demanded a total shift in how we viewed our survival. Chapter 3. The Fragile Recovery. The 21st century brought a desperate kind of innovation. We realized that if we did nothing, the Caribbean reef would be a memory by 2050. In Jamaica, scientists and locals began to experiment with biorock technology. They submerged metal structures and ran a low-voltage electric current through them. This current causes minerals to precipitate out of the seawater, forming a limestone coating similar to a natural reef. Coral fragments are then attached to these structures. They grow 3 to 4 times faster than normal. It is an underwater life support system. It is expensive and difficult, but it works. In Belize, the fight took a political turn. The government realized the Great Maya Reef was their greatest asset. They banned offshore oil exploration. They expanded marine protected areas. They cracked down on illegal fishing. In 2018, these efforts paid off. The Belize Barrier Reef was removed from the list of World Heritage Sites in danger. It was a rare moment of hope. It showed that when policy aligns with biology, the sea can push back against the decline. But even the best policy cannot stop the warming of the ocean. The year 2023 brought the most severe test yet. A massive heat wave sat over the Caribbean for months. Water temperatures in the Florida Keys and parts of the Bahamas reached nearly 100 degrees Fahrenheit. This wasn't just bleaching. This was thermal shock. Corals were dying before they could even turn white. They were sloughing off their skin and dissolving. In the aftermath, divers found entire nurseries wiped out in a single week. The vulnerability we feel now is different. It is no longer about local pollution or overfishing. It is about a global system that is cooking our backyard. Today, the Caribbean is a laboratory for survival. We have coral gardeners in almost every island. They grow fragments of staghorn in underwater nurseries that look like small trees. They outplant them by hand, one by one. It is a labor of love, but the scale is daunting. We are planting thousands of corals while the ocean is killing millions. The math is not in our favor. Yet we continue. We do it because there is no other choice. If the reef goes, the sand on our beaches disappears. If the sand disappears, the tourism economy dies. If the reef dies, the next major hurricane will walk right into our living rooms. We are seeing a new generation of Caribbean people who see the reef as a member of the family. There is a move toward blue carbon and reef insurance. In Mexico and parts of the Caribbean, insurance policies are now taken out on the reef itself. If a hurricane hits, the payout goes directly to repairing the coral. This is the world we live in now. We have to insure the natural world against the damage we have done to it. It is a strange, tense reality. The legacy of the Caribbean reef is currently being written in the heat of the water. We are at a crossroads where human ingenuity is racing against planetary shifts. We have the technology to grow coral, but we do not yet have the global will to cool the sea. The vulnerability of our islands is a mirror. It reflects the vulnerability of the entire planet. We are the first to feel it, because we are surrounded by the evidence. Our future is tied to the survival of a small, soft animal that builds walls of stone. The water is still blue. To the casual eye, it still looks like paradise. But beneath the waves, the struggle continues every second. The reef is fighting for its life. And because the reef is fighting, we are fighting. The cost of failure is the loss of our home. The final line of our history will not be written on land. It will be carved into the limestone of the seafloor by the survivors who refuse to let the shield crumble.